Coffee Conversations about Influencer Marketing is brought to you by Influential, a strategic consultancy that takes the guesswork out of influencer marketing for your brand. We provide much-needed strategically crafted frameworks on how to implement influencer campaigns specific to your brand needs.
Good day, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning into Coffee Conversations about Influencer Marketing again. As always, I'm Anne, and I'm your host for today. And today, we truly have an exciting episode lined up. I know I say this every week, but today's is even more special. We are speaking about the BabySoft influencer campaign that caused a huge ruckus on Twitter and trended even a couple of weeks ago, but it kind of trended for all the wrong reasons. Instead of people being influenced, they were more mocking the content and wondering who was actually responsible for approving this content. But was it an actual failure or was it a success? So today we have two special people talking to us about this campaign. Firstly, we have Talia Goldberg. She is a freelance creative director and social media strategist. She co-founded and sold Nifty 250, an Instagram printing startup, was the creative director of Seattle Coffee Company, and now works with a range of clients on everything from influencer marketing and Instagram strategy to e-commerce. So she is a great person for us to talk to about marketing and the influencer side of things on this campaign. And then we have Muhale Mutohung, who is an actor, model, entrepreneur, and an influencer. And he was an influencer on this campaign. He's also a CEO and founder of a company called Glam Trope, a company that aims to provide makeovers for disadvantaged children for their matric dances. So we wanted Muhale on the podcast to talk to us more about it from an influencer perspective who actually worked on it. So without any further delay, here is today's episode. Please let us know what you think. Let us know what your thoughts was on the BabySoft campaign. Enjoy. Good morning, Talia and Muhale. Thank you so much for making time to be on the podcast today discussing the BabySoft Supreme Quilt campaign that was on a couple of weeks ago. So let's start at the beginning. Can each of you maybe just introduce yourself to our listeners? Let's start with you, Muhale. Please tell us more about yourself.
Cool. So my name is Muhale Mutohung Hlongo. I'm 24 years old. I am an entrepreneur, model, and actor, a social media influencer as well. But I'm predominantly more into entrepreneurship, and that's me.
Amazing. Amazing. And you, Talia?
I am Talia Goldberg. I am currently a freelance creative director and social media strategist. In the past, I've started and sold a tech startup, and I've worked with some amazing South African brands in terms of influencers, social media strategy, and creative direction.
Oh, wonderful. We definitely have the right people today to talk about this campaign. I'm so excited.
Yes, yes, yes.
So let's start with you, Muhale. Since you were an influencer on this campaign, I think it's only fit that we ask you to give us a bit of background on the campaign. So what was it about? What really was the brief? And how did you get involved in it?
Okay, cool. So I have an app, an influencer's app called Human.
Yeah.
On Humans, they put down, you know, different types of campaigns, and how it works is that you usually go there and bid a price that you would charge for the campaign after obviously seeing the entire description of what they want you to do. So I went on to Humans, but I didn't really bid. Then I got a message from them saying they'd like me to be part of the campaign.
Okay.
If you know, I like what the brief is about, then I went to look at the brief. So the brief was mainly, we must create content around the new, you know, BabySoft Supreme Quilt. And the idea around it was to show people that there is a more softer type of toilet paper that they're introducing, with more, you know, sheets, more luxurious, more soft and so forth. But, you know, the whole idea was to be as creative as possible because it's tissue at the end of the day, and there's not really much you know can do with tissue. So they said, okay, look at, you know, the type of social media content that you would put out there. And with me, I put out more fashion, I put out more lifestyle. And I had to think of, you know, ways to include that into what I would, you know, post on a daily basis. And that was basically the brief and how I got into it.
Okay. Do you have any idea what the strategy behind this campaign perhaps was?
So I think the strategy was to you know, get people to have conversation about tissue. Because I don't think people just sit down and decide to say, guys, let's talk about toilet paper. People don't do that. So the idea was to get people talking about it and kind of look at what do people really love about toilet paper and why do people buy a baby soft? And since there is something more softer than what we know baby soft to be, are people still going to buy it? And I think the main idea for me was to push conversation and have people talking.
Okay, because I kind of looked at it and I was like, do we really need influencers on a toilet paper campaign? Like, you know, people love baby softs in any case. Why would... So my question is, what was the real objectives of this campaign? Was it just to stir conversation? Or was it to create awareness of this new Supreme Quilts range?
I think a bit of both, but mostly conservation, because like you're saying, and you are correct, people love baby soft. People are really buying baby soft. And for people, it's not even a brainer. When people think about the best toilet paper, they think baby soft. So there's not much really to convince people about, because baby soft is a quality product that's been there for long and people are already using it. So I think more conversation and because I think people, and especially when it went to Twitter, which I know we will talk about that later, but people had a whole lot of ideas around how it could have been done. But I definitely think conversation is it.
Okay. Talia, what was your kind of impression of the brief, or could have been clearer?
So I work in social media, and so like I like, and I work with a lot of influencers for different brands. So I'm on the App Humans mainly just to see kind of what brands are posting, and what agencies are posting. So it's kind of like a little bit of undercover detective work of who's doing what. And seeing it like
your cover's been blown, Talia. Been blown.
Pick me off the app. But basically, I really enjoy seeing like which brands are working on these kind of things, what kind of things they're asking influencers for, what kind of budget they have. And then after the campaign, like I go check the hashtag and see like, oh, how many people did they use? And I think, I think it's like an interesting thing. I mean, it's amazing that Babysoft has budget in the middle of a global pandemic to spend on influencer marketing. I think that says actually a lot about, if you remember at the beginning of the pandemic, like how many people were like, stocking up on toilet paper, and it was like you couldn't get toilet paper at the shop, so I'm sure their sales were just like insane for the month of
absolutely.
They've probably never done so much sales in their life, so it was like, and to be honest, I thought that they should have done something then. I thought, and I think that's a little bit of my feeling of frustration with brands in South Africa, is I don't think they're very flexible and responsive to like the current moment. It was such a toilet paper moment then. I mean, people were literally like fighting in stores over. I mean, it's not funny, but it is kind of funny in hindsight.
Absolutely.
So I kind of had a look at the brief. To be honest, I don't think, I think I really kind of started seeing it a lot on Twitter, which was kind of taken out of the context of Instagram and having a caption, and I think that's where it kind of went most viral was Twitter. And I think the whole thing of seeing this new soft quills line or whatever they were trying to sell was completely lost in that conversation. I think people were just posting these kind of really funny lifestyle pictures with toilet paper in it. So I don't know if it necessarily got across the thing that it wanted to do. I definitely think people were talking about baby soft, and if that was their objective, that's great. I think there also is this interesting thing in marketing where it's like you want to kind of own a whole kind of brand. You want to own the whole, I've kind of lost the word now, but like when you think of tissue, and well, more like when people say tissues, they're like, well, you pass me a Kleenex, or I'm going to use Tippex, or when you use glue, it's like Pritt, even though like no one has bought Pritt in like it's so expensive. And I think like if they could start doing a thing where you don't ask for like 2-ply or 3-ply toilet paper, you ask for baby soft, I mean, that's like pretty women.
Absolutely. But I saw the brief, and the brief was kind of like, we want you to post really heartfelt, authentic content, kind of celebrating the luxurious moments. And I don't feel like that's what came through on the actual content. And I think, Mwala, maybe you can elaborate to us what kind of content you created for this campaign.
Cool. So we, you know, had to create three types of content. So it was, you know, two on your Instagram feed and one Instagram story. So the very first one was just to showcase that there is Babysoft Supreme Quilt, a new product within the Babysoft range. Mm-hmm. And I think that one was fairly okay. Because you know, you were just saying, hey guys, there's a new product. Take a picture with the product or, you know, the product in the background or whatever the case might be. Mm-hmm. Just to say, guys, here. And I think where the bit of the confusion came in was with the second post.
Okay.
Because with the second post, then you had to create a lifestyle post using toilet paper.
Got it.
Yes.
How do you even do that?
Yeah, that was a bit difficult because it is toilet paper.
Yeah, well, it's a bit intimate to create this lifestyle picture.
There's not much you can do. And I think there was a bit of a struggle with that type of content because they said to me that, I mean, you post fashion, see what you can put together with tissue and fashion. And I was so confused. You know, I was like, oh my God, how does one do this? and the third one was an Instagram story, just, you know, talking about the benefits of the product, which that one was fine as well. So the one that was most, the one that was most difficult was the second one, the lifestyle post.
And I think that's the one that caused all the conversation on
that's
Twitter,
the one.
To be very honest.
That's the one. That's the one. Because, you know, so I think the brief for the first and the third post were okay. We could have maybe ended it there. The one with the lifestyle post and the tissue was the one that got people creating all sorts of weird stuff, and we're seeing a whole lot of things, mine included. But that is the content that I created.
If you don't
look too,
can I just ask, in terms of the two posts that you posted to your feed, what your engagement was like on your first post versus the lifestyle post? Like, if you did get a lot more engagement, comments, eyeballs on the second one, or if it was kind of equal?
So I got more interaction on the second one, actually, the one that was very confusing. Because, I mean, I got over 23,000 likes, over 270 comments. You know, people were interacting with a lot. Whereas the first one was about 13,000 likes and about 70 comments. So they found the second one funny. But I'm not sure if it was really about the product or about me just posing with tissue. So, you know, I think the message is a bit lost in translation. It was, you know, entertainment at the end of the day, but, you know, I think it didn't really deliver the message that it was supposed to, because people were focusing more on the outfit, me having the t-shirt around my neck, and not really about the product that, you know, we're trying to get people to see.
Absolutely. But to the credit of all the influencers, everyone got very creative.
Yes.
Like, everyone put out some really creative stuff there. I don't know if I would have done that, but credit due where credit is due. But that leads me to another question.
Yes.
And since the second post was so tricky to do, was there actually a pre-approval process for this content that actually went through client that said, sure, post that?
There actually was. And it took a while, because what they did is, I mean, we would submit the content on a Sunday and they would send it over to client, and it would probably come back the following week. So I'm guessing clients sat down and looked at all the posts and actually approved it, you know? And I did go on social media and say, all of this was approved by clients, because it was not okay guys, just take pictures and post. There was actually a lengthy pre-approval process. So we're not really sure what happened behind closed doors with clients and the agency there. But yeah, there was a pre-approval process.
That's so strange. I'm sorry.
I know.
And that's what I was going to ask. Like, there was a process. Okay. Was everything done online and through the app? Or was there like a real person who actually spoke to you to kind of try and keep you on brand or on brief and kind of guide you? Or was it just kind of like through the app, submit your things, you'll get the approval and post?
There was a real person. So what they did is they assigned a lady who, you know, you would send content to, and she would remind you and say, okay, guys, I need content Sunday at 2 p.m. So there was a real person, like, who call us, make sure that, you know, everything is happening.
Okay, perfect. So, Talia, what was your overall thoughts of this campaign, like, when you just looked at it?
I thought it was extremely random. I thought...
Mixed two of us.
I thought that the women were extremely creative, which props to them. And I think that the brand got people talking about BabyZaf. I've got to say that at the end of the day, I think it's quite difficult to get people to talk about toilet paper. So if this was a fun, creative way to do it, and that was their objective, then, I mean, then they achieved their objective.
But keep the brief in mind. I think we can all agree, saying do heartfelt, relatable content. They kind of missed the mark there, right? With that objective.
I think that sometimes the problem is the brief.
Yes.
And not necessarily, like, it's not the execution of the brief. It's just a really bad brief. And I mean, I didn't really understand the brief. I'm reading it again now, and it's about maintaining a smile and small wins. And it's just a very strange brief. But I think toilet paper is a very strange product to market. Congrats to them.
But do you think then, does toilet paper really need to be marketed through, like, influencers?
My honest opinion is no, but if brands have budgets and they want to give it to influencers, I'm all for influencers getting paid.
Absolutely. The business we're in.
And if they get to create, like, really fun content and they agree to the brief and they're happy with the amount that they got paid and they get to do something fun and creative, that's amazing, because I think there are so many brands that influencers would absolutely die to work with, who at this point are basically offering trade exchange or here's some product, or are really not willing to part with actual cash. So at the end of the day, I think that the more brands that are willing to put their money where their mouth is and pay people for their content, I think overall it's just much better for the influencer economy in South Africa. I think it's bad in terms of, I don't like these one post campaigns. I think I really believe in, like, building long-term relationships between the client, the brand, and influencers, and where people can actually start, I don't want to say influencing, but, like, being content creators and actually doing this as a job, where I find in South Africa that's, like, really not very viable, unless you're kind of living at home with your parents and studying and you don't really have that many bills to pay. I don't think that many people who are able to afford a full amazing lifestyle that they're kind of selling on Instagram via selling Instagram posts.
Oh, I think that is so valuable, because that is so true. But I do think we'll kind of get there, but we kind of lagging.
I don't know if we're going to get there.
Really? Mwale, what do you think?
Sure. I think it's going to be a long process. It's not going to happen as, maybe as quick as we want it to be. But yeah, I definitely agree with Taylor that.
I really hope we do.
I think what I've seen in this market is that there are just too many people willing to post for free. So if you're not willing, kind of do it as a trade exchange, take the product and post about it, they'll just move on to someone else, because influence,
they can,
because so many people, and I think obviously, like, every year there are more and more young people who are getting into this, and I think I can't remember that exactly, but they asked, like, a whole lot of teenagers in the UK what their dream job was. They all wanted to be YouTubers and influencers. I mean, when I was, like, a teenager, like, there wasn't YouTube, and that you couldn't be a content creator. These things
didn't exist. Yeah.
But I don't think that people realize how difficult it actually is to get money out of brands, unless you already have, like, hundreds of thousands of followers, like your Mahalis or your Sarah Langers. So I think it's really difficult to grow the space because of how many people are willing to do it for free. And the brands are not necessarily, I don't know why they're not seeing the value in it in terms of paying and building these long-term relationships. It does make me a little disheartened. I think in South Africa, it just is an incredibly difficult career because of how many people are wanting to do it, how many people keep coming up in it, and how many people are willing to work for free or a very small amount or a trade exchange for way too long into their kind of careers. So they already have 5,000-10,000 followers and they've got a niche and they're creating amazing content, and a brand comes to them and says, oh, we'll give you 2,000 rand worth of product. Oh, I'll drop you off this bottle of vodka, I'll give you this tequila, whatever, come to this experience. And the brands are kind of very used to not getting that much kickback, I think, where they're like, oh, I'm so grateful for all this free shit. And I've always said the operative word in free shit is shit. In terms of, I'm saying the stuff that you get paid and then you buy, that's amazing. Like, you need to be able to actually get paid money so that you can pay your rent. And if you want to get some free tequila on top of it, amazing. But I also want to get paid for posting about tequila, if that's what I'm posting about.
100%. 100%.
Most of you know that Influential is our podcast sponsor. But did you know that my co-host Anne heads up the agency? And that is the first ever boutique agency in South Africa that specializes in developing strategy for influencer marketing. Anne and her team are experts in the field and have spent years honing their skills and knowledge about influencer marketing and at some of the country's biggest PR and media agencies. The moment that you think you might want an influencer campaign, make sure to call or email them first, because without strategy, you might not have the outcomes that you would like and are looking for. In addition to talking all things influence on this podcast, Anne also puts together the fantastic Influential newsletter that comes out every month. And this is another way for you to keep up to date with the industry. The link to latest newsletter is in the show notes. Check it out. And if you like, please subscribe. Anne's contact details are also on there. Let's keep the conversation flowing.
It's a fantastic point. I think Molly and I are both like, yes, we think the same thing. But getting back to the campaign, looking at what Molly said, that one in three posts was, the brief was clear, everyone could do that. But the second one was a bit tricky.
Yeah.
Where, Talia, do you think the brand could have maybe done a better job of maybe instructing the influencers of what exactly they wanted, or should they have changed that brief?
I mean, I think they could have maybe given examples of like shot their own images in terms of like what the kind of things they were looking for. Alternatively, like, we're looking at it like they've got it wrong, and maybe the brand's looking at it like, wow, these people went above and beyond and made like toilet paper shoes and all this. And I think that if people hadn't been so creative and hadn't gone so kind of over the top and it was like so hysterically funny, I don't think it would have gone on Twitter, and I don't think it would have, I don't know if it went viral or not. Like, I'm not a huge fan of that word, but a lot of people saw it because of the person who made the whole thread about it on Twitter, where, to be honest, I didn't see it on Instagram at all until I went and actually searched and looked for it myself. It wasn't in my feed of the people I follow. So maybe it did work, even though it didn't work.
I get what you're saying. And the same with me. I didn't see it on my Instagram feed at all. I saw it on Twitter and I saw the discussions. And I was like, wait, let me go have a look at this. Yeah. And I think a lot of people did find out about the campaign that way, right?
Yeah.
So that leads me to the next question. Mwale, people on Twitter were talking. I mean, I think it even trended at some point. Babysoft, Quilt Range, hashtag trended. Amazing, right? Because brands are always like, yes, we want to trend. Yeah. But then when you looked at the conversations, people were kind of mocking. Uh-huh. They were criticizing. It was revolved around the payment around the campaign. So is all PR really good publicity? I don't know.
I don't really think so. I mean, they sent us a message after everything went viral on Twitter. And they said, we are seeing what's happening on Twitter. Don't worry. All is fine. All is well. And for me, I was like, it's good for people to talk about the brand and the product, but it's also important to look at what exactly are they saying about the product. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, you don't want, you know, the brand to be tarnished or to be bashed, to say, I mean, yeah, we get that you guys have budget and you're introducing a new product, but the way you guys went about it was not well. It did not work. Mm. So there was a lot of criticism. There was a lot of mockery. There was a lot of people laughing, you know? Yeah. And we can't just say PR is good because people are talking. PR is bad depending on what people are saying. So I don't think it was good at all.
Okay. Because it can be really reputationally damaging, right?
Yes.
So, Talia, how do brands, or how can they avoid these kind of conversations getting out of hand? I mean, one moment you are literally just doing a campaign for your brand, and the next you just see all these negative comments coming out. Is there a way to actually kind of try and control that people don't go off script, so to speak?
I don't think so. I think that if you're playing on the internet, this is what you're going to get. I mean, even when coronavirus started, I mean, the amount of jokes the South Africans were making. I think South Africans just make jokes about a lot of things. Like, things can be going really bad. I got to say, the one thing South Africans 100% have is a really good sense of humor. And everything's a joke.
Oh, yeah.
Everything's funny. So, I mean, I don't think this was reputationally damaging to Saysoft. I think that there have been, brands have made serious missteps in terms of so many other, this was not like an incident like the Spur video. Like, this is not even close.
Yeah, look.
And I think the other interesting thing with social media is, and we're in this 24-hour news cycle, so it was funny for like, not even 24 hours. I don't think it even got its 24 hours. Of fame, it kind of
was like a solid 4 or 5 hour block.
And then I think the people in marketing and influencers and us were still having a conversation about it, but I don't think that it affected anyone. And maybe other people, when they walk into Checkers or Pick and Pay or Spa and they see baby stuff, they'll see it and like the brand recognition, they'll lol about the Instagram of the girl with the toilet paper on her shoe. I thought that was a really good one. And maybe they'll have a laugh about it. Like, they have actually a genuinely good feeling towards the brand because maybe it doesn't take itself so seriously. And I love brands that don't take themselves so seriously. But I don't know if that's what they want to get across. For me, I don't think it's a terrible thing. But I don't know how seriously they take themselves or don't take themselves.
Yeah.
It is quite difficult to take yourself seriously as toilet paper, though.
But at the end of the day, like, Saysoft toilet paper's always had this very wholesome kind of image about it. Like, it's wholesome, it's family, and bam, this campaign comes and we're all like, oh, this is funny. Maybe it's a repositioning, I don't know. And like you say, people aren't exactly having negative feelings towards it. They're just like, that was funny.
And I think that the other thing is, I think that Twitter is not an indication of the broader South African market. And I think that sometimes, like, I mean, I've been on Twitter since like 2009. I'm obsessed with Twitter. I love Twitter. I get all my news and information from Twitter. But most of my friends and most of the people I know are not on Twitter. They don't use it. They don't see the news like I do. And they have a completely different experience of it. Like, they wouldn't have seen this baby soft thing. It wouldn't have blown up. It was not like this huge incident. So I don't know how many people, and then I think it's really funny when they do this PR reports and it says, oh, we reached 30 million eyeballs. And you're like, they're not even 30 million South Africans. You did not reach half the population. It was the same people over and over again. So I think it's interesting. I didn't think it was a bad thing. I think it blew up. It was funny. Whether the brand wants to continue this or not, I guess, well, I'll keep checking on humans to see if they post again.
Please alert us when they do. Moale, you send us a message the moment that happens, please.
Yes, 100%.
So then the big question is, Moale, do you think this campaign was a success? Did they reach their objectives? And why?
Sure. To be honest, I don't think they did because of the particular second post. I think with the first post and the third post, that would have been fine. It would have made a campaign a success because it would have just been Babystart using influencers to introduce a new product. It ends there.
Yeah.
That would have been fine. But with the lifestyle post that made a trend on Twitter, it diverted the attention of what the campaign is about and what they're trying to achieve, and made it look like they were not prepared, made it look like the brief was not put out correctly, made it look like, you know, someone somewhere is not doing their job. Mm-hmm. So it made people really look at all the mistakes about the brief and the campaign and Babysoft itself more than what the objective of the campaign was, which led then to people saying, it's not it. So my personal honest opinion, no, it wasn't.
Okay, interesting. And you, Talia, what do you think?
I agree and disagree. I agree on the fact that the whole baby soft quilts or whatever, the new product that they were launching, I think that was completely lost in the conversation. And I think that if they wanted anyone to know they had a new product, that was a complete fail. Mm-hmm. It did not work at all. And I think that if they hadn't had that second post, which got a lot more engagement on Instagram, but also on Twitter, I think it would have had reached a very small amount of people. So you can compare that versus they added in this really funny thing that didn't necessarily fit any brief, and the influencers went above and beyond in creativity, and it reached probably 10 times as many people because it was so ridiculous and funny. So if they were looking for brand reach and people talking about baby stuff, they got it. I mean, I think the exact same thing happened last week. I don't know if you saw with the Lifebuoy soap.
I did.
The video with Sarah Langer washing her hands with Lifebuoy soap, and then all these people were going, oh, Sarah Langer would never use that. Like, she's wearing Richmond Seezy. She's wearing, like, all these designer brands. There's no way that that's the soap that she's using.
It's complete disconnect.
Why don't they use influencers who actually will use that product? All of this stuff. At the end of the day, however much they paid Sarah for that campaign, because they used it and it didn't work, they had probably 100 times more conversation around the campaign and the video and people posting about it because the brand connect was kind of wrong. But people were still talking about Lifebuoy soap, and like, I would never talk about Lifebuoy soap, but there I am talking about Lifebuoy soap's like free earned media that they got because it was a disconnect. So I think there's like this weird thing happening that kind of when you do wrong, but like, you don't necessarily, I don't want to say, you didn't fuck up, but it didn't really work. There's kind of this thing where it actually goes up more, and it's kind of interesting. And I think that if people stuck to the brief and it was very like vanilla and clean and kind of boring, I don't think that it would have got the reach that it did. And I think that we all know on social media it's impossible to get reach these days without boosting. So the fact that they got this organic reach via this, I mean maybe that's actually the trick, is just having things that don't really, really work and are a little bit strange, and there you've got your reach.
Yeah,
I'm always conflicted about it, I'm not gonna lie. Speaking about the Lifebuoy campaign, speaking about this campaign, it is kind of like, are brands going out there to do like anti-campaigns to get that reach?
I think so.
And it's kind of, you know, and then I'm also like, but did it work if the sentiment wasn't positive? You know, it's just, it's all very confusing to me. If you wanted reach and talkability, great, but do you not want that sentiment to be either neutral or positive? Is that then not, that's what your kind of objective then is? Then this failed.
But I think that people are being negative towards the execution of the campaign. I don't think that people are being negative towards Lifebuoy or Babysoft or Sarah Langer or any influencers who were in the baby.
Fair enough.
So it's like kind of an interesting thing because I don't think it was bad for the brand. And I don't think that
people... More for the influencer.
Perhaps. And I don't think that Lifebuoy or Babysoft are going to see a reduction in sales because of it. I don't think people will be like, oh, no, I'm not, no. I never buy Babysoft again. I think that Babysoft customers, the majority of them will never have seen this campaign anyway because they aren't on Instagram, mm-hmm. they aren't on Twitter, they're probably older. We don't even know who their actual audience and target market is. I feel like millennials are probably buying the cheapest toilet paper possible at this time in a global
pandemic. Yes.
So I think it's all very interesting, and I think these are very difficult products to market. So if they're huge brands and they have huge budgets and they can get away with doing funny things like this and it just increases talkability around the brand, however ridiculous it is, I still don't think it's a negative sentiment. I don't think people are like, Babysoft is shit, Lifebuoy is shit.
No, I think that
the people who work in the marketing department don't necessarily know what they're doing.
You know, but then that also, you said an interesting thing. We don't know who their target market was. Yeah. And if they're not speaking to their target market, does it even matter that the campaign existed then? Like,
exactly. You know? But I think that's like the really funny thing about social media. And it's just like, I think that not all brands need to have social media platforms. I don't think Babysoft needs a Twitter. Yep. Do they need to do influencer campaigns? It's interesting.
No, it 100% is. That's the first question also. I was like, it's toilet paper. It's probably the most known and loved toilet paper in South Africa. What, you know, I don't know. I don't know, guys. But some clients and the marketing might have tried the influencer marketing for the first time on a campaign like this. Mm-hmm. It blew up. And they might have kind of like felt like they were burnt a little bit. Maybe they don't think it was a success. How do you even turn that around and kind of get confidence back into influencer marketing then? Because we've seen it time and time again with clients who go like, you know what, I don't like influencer marketing. I did a campaign and it didn't work for me. Mm. How do you restore that confidence? I don't know.
I mean, for me, to be honest, I think that the major problem here is the humans app, and that's why I'm kind of so interested in it. The problem is not the brands. I don't even think the problem is the influencers. I think it's the agencies in between who are putting these influencers together, and I think they should be held a lot more accountable. I think using an app like Humans is so lazy. I think that if your speciality is digital marketing and social media, and your whole thing is setting up amazing collaborations with influencers for your brand, you should know all the influencers. Like, you should know them. You should have relationships with them. You should be able to talk to them. You should have to have amazing briefs. And I think that they're trying to use this app almost to get scale and that people can kind of nominate themselves. Like, you don't know them. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, Charlize Theron doesn't get to, like, nominate herself for, like, a Dior ad. Like, you want the brand goes and picks the person, you know, who they want as the favorite brand. And I think it's the same with this influencer marketing, is that whoever you are giving your product to, you're paying to post about it, you're really saying you are an ambassador for my brand, whether that's one post, whether that's a campaign over 3 years, whether it's like Nadia Jaffe does the face of Canel Wolf. That you have to buy into everything that influencer has done in the past, is going to do going through. Like, you have to buy into what it is they're selling. And I think that using these apps, and there are other websites where you can do it, where like people literally bid to do it, I think it's a lazy way to do it. And I think you're going to keep getting these mistakes. I mean, at the same time, I think that there is also this huge problem where agencies and people who work in these influencer marketing are really good friends with influencers, and then they kind of land up using the same people over and over again. And then you have all these micro influencers on Twitter saying like, open up the industry and it's not fair and we can't get a foot in the door. And that's 100% true too. But I think that everyone in the agency is actually like, if this is your bread and butter and you believe in influencer marketing and you really think that they do boost brand awareness, boost sales, whatever you are using them for, I think that you really have to build relationships with micro influencers, macro influencers, all of them, and like actually really craft amazing briefs and maybe go smaller and use less people, but also try and use new people. And I think those agencies, I think the brands, I think I find it's not very often that the brand puts these campaigns together themselves. It's almost always like an agency. And I think that's where you major disconnect, unfortunately.
That's interesting. What do you think, Mwale?
Sure. So I definitely think that brands should do more work, more than just handing everything over to agency and feel like, oh, no, the agency will do the work. It's fine. We'll just relax. You know, they should also do their part in researching who they want to use, researching what's out there in the market, you know, testing how, you know, whatever they want to do will be perceived. Because I think it's all great and well to use agency, but that should not be the only thing they rely on without doing their own homework. Because also we should remember that the agency wants to use whatever they want to use, they want to make their money, and that's it, you know. And they don't really sometimes care enough for the brand to think about the repercussions if whatever goes wrong, if they choose whatever influencer that might not be good for the brand. And like Tyler's saying, that these influencers become ambassadors for the product, even if it's one post, even if it's one tweet, because they represent the entire brand because of association. So my take is brands and the marketing team and marketing directors should really put in more effort to work closely within the entire campaign. You know, they should not just hand over everything to agency and remove themselves from the process, because then it means that they're not really involved in the process. They just want to pay it over, and as long as the work is done. So I think, yeah, they should work closely with influencers, know who's being used, who's not being used, why the person is being used, and the execution, so that, you know, when everything has gone out there, they're also able to, you know, become accountable and say, okay, this is what we did, this is what happened, instead of, you know, them not really knowing anything because they were not fully involved.
I 100% agree with both of you. And I think for me, the biggest disconnect is that the brands that actually hire these agencies to do things, they need to be more collaborative. So it needs to be more of a partnership. You can't just be like, and I look, there's agencies out there that specializes in influence marketing, like you have one specialized in PR, and that's amazing. They know their influencers, they have the relationships, they build the databases, they vet people, they know what, you know, audiences go where, they know how to actually pair influencers with the right campaigns. But you still need the brand and the marketer to come to the party and say, you know what, let's do this, let's sit together, let's see how we craft a strategy. What do we want out of this? Like, do I have a vision for this campaign? Do I know what success looks like? And then go, let's work on this. Sit together, here's the influencers we think will work amazingly well with your brand. We've vetted them. They haven't worked with your competitors in so many years. This is what people think of them. They're the right target market they're speaking to. What do you think? And then it becomes a conversation. And at the end of the day, you hopefully get the right people on a campaign.
100%.
And then I think what amazing that happens from that is once you have the conversation and once like the influencer has met the agency and has met the brand, I think that the brand then kind of also, and you build a relationship and there's some trust and you've done one post, then I think there's a lot more room for growth. We can work with you again. And I love what you did with that. Let's do this. Oh, winter's coming. Let's do something around this. Let's do this. We're doing this charity campaign. Will you be involved with it? And I think my problem with like an app like Humans is it's very transactional. It's very, here's the brief. What we're going to send you. This is what we're going to do. Never hear from you again. It's like, app, like you don't have any connection to the brand. You don't have any connection to the agency. Like if you wanted to pitch yourself to that brand again because you're posted like so amazingly and you're like, oh, I have this amazing idea I could do, you're so disconnected. Where back in the day, like I don't know, like back in the day, but like when I used to work with brands, like I was having meetings with the actual brand manager and I had the email address. And like if I came up with a cool idea of something I wanted to do, I could just send them an email and go have a meeting, and then you get the ball rolling. But I feel like the way that it's kind of set up now is like it's not set up to grow an industry or economy around influencers. It's about like, here, take the money, whoever comes up next, we'll pay them, kind of chat. Yeah.
And I agree with that. I come from PR background, and like you said, back in the day, that's not really back in the day. But before all these apps and things, when we used influencers, when we used media and campaigns, I used to sit one-on-one meetings with these people and be like, awesome, this is why we would love to collaborate with you on this brand. You've done X, Y, and Z, which we really appreciate. Brand loves you. Let's talk. What can we do together? Do you have any cool ideas that you maybe think? Let's talk about it. Let's brainstorm together. And I built such great relationships that they 100% were top of mind when I had campaigns that would fit them.
Yeah.
And secondly, when they would just pop me an email or a WhatsApp even going like, yeah, Anne, I've got a great idea. Can we chat? I'd be like, yeah, let's go. You know?
And I think that from your perspective, and from the brand's perspective, it's more expensive to do things like that because it takes longer to go have meetings and all of that. But I think that the quality of engagement and the quality of relationships you get out of it, it's like you can't even compare.
It's completely priceless. You can't put a number on that. Okay, guys, it's unfortunately come to almost the end of our conversation. And I've absolutely loved this because we've got like such a holistic view and just kind of comments and thoughts on this campaign, which is great. So let's start with Mwali. Do you think that this campaign will aid in selling more of the new Baby Soft range?
Sure. I think when people go to store and maybe see Baby Soft Supreme Quilts, they'll think, oh my, this is the conversation that is happening on Twitter. And maybe that might just prompt people to buy it or try it. But
bit of intrigue.
Yeah. But I think Babysoft already has an existing customer base that doesn't really need to be convinced about quality, about the greatness of the toilet paper. So I think people will maybe buy it just because they were talking about it. Or maybe just to say, okay, well, I've been buying Babysoft for all my life or for recent times. Let me try this one and see what Mohale was saying about it. But I don't think the sales would drop in any way. I don't think they'll rise extremely. I think people will just buy Baby Soft.
Will you buy it?
I think I definitely would. To be honest with you, it is very much soft. It is great. It is proper.
Oh, good.
So the qualities that I spoke about are really there.
Fantastic.
So yes, I definitely would.
Amazing. And you, Talia, do you think people will actually go out and buy Baby Soft's new range because of this campaign?
No. I don't think that anyone's rushing to the shops to buy this Baby Soft product. I think that if they're already a Baby Soft customer, and I feel like, I also feel like in supermarkets, it's this kind of like supermarket blindness that you kind of, I think that everyone wants to go into a shop and you buy the same things that you always buy, and you have like your big shop at the end of the month, you have the smaller shops in between, you know, exactly like if you're an all gold person, you're buying that all gold tomato sauce. Like, I feel like everyone is like very set in their ways, and like the only way you're going to change someone's like choice of hot chocolate is if, I think it's all generally more word of mouth. I don't think that anyone's standing at the toilet paper aisle saying, ooh, new toilet paper. This is so exciting. I think that people the one that they always buy. I think that if budgets are tighter, which they definitely are, I think it's very price driven of how people are going to shop. I don't think that this campaign will boost sales. I mean, if it's a brand new product, out of course sales are going to increase because you're starting at zero, but I don't think that this is a campaign that made people go to the shop and be like, wow, I'm going to change my toilet paper today.
Will you try it, Talia? Will you go in and buy this range?
And now that you're asking me to, I think I shall.
Fantastic. Give us feedback. I want to see your creative post, Talia.
Okay, I'll tag
you. Need to put it up.
I'll tag you.
Amazing.
Free posts, free
brands. Oh, it's hilarious. I love it so much. Well, guys, thank you so much. This has been really an amazing chat. And hopefully we can chat about more campaigns coming up in the future.
Yeah, definitely.
More anti-campaigns. Let's see what happens. Talia, can you please tell people where they can find you on social media so you can connect?
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter. My handle is Talia Goldberg. It's T-A-L-Y-A, not Y-L-A.
And yourself, Mohale?
So with me on Instagram, it's Mohale_77. And then on Twitter, it's Mohale_Madao.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, guys. Have a fantastic day. And we will chat soon, I'm sure.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. It's a huge pleasure, Talia. Thanks, cool. Guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.